Okay, we are still in chapter 2, and we will be wrapping up chapter 2 this morning, which means we only have one chapter left in this book of Habakkuk. And I would imagine this, if we took a survey at this point, that most people would say, you know, I'm really glad that we did this. Because I would imagine that for some of you, you haven't really had much exposure to this Old Testament prophet at all. And just such a strong message that comes to us was we take what took place in the days of Habakkuk and we bring it into the New Testament and even apply it to the places where we're at ourselves today, because we understand that there was a great moral corruption taking place. And then we look around in our world, and do we see that there's a great moral corruption that's taking place? Quite obviously we do. But as we were closing up last week, just remember what we talked most about last week was this, is that those who entice others to join them in their sin will be completely undone. That there's a day coming when the glory of the Lord will fill the entire earth. And that everyone will understand that there indeed is a God who has created all that we see and we know, and a God who has offered salvation to us through Jesus Christ. And a God who is a God of grace and a God of love. And we understand this. That as much as maybe we would like to see it, and maybe we would pray to that end, that not everyone is going to come to faith in Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, sometimes when the gospel falls upon people, it doesn't open their hearts and loosen their hearts up to receive Christ. It has a hardening effect. And we don't understand it. We don't really like that. We wish it would be different every time that we share the gospel, that the lights would just go on and all of that. But we need to understand that sin is a great, great enemy. And sin has been in the world from the very beginning. And it will continue to steal the heart of everyone, if not for the Spirit of glory working in the lives of those who are called by Jesus Christ to become his people. But basically what we learned last week was this, is that when people do terrible and awful things like the Babylonians were doing to some of the nations that they were conquering, and we know that Judah will actually fall to this Babylonian army in not so much time. But God makes a promise, and the promise is this, is the evil they've done on others will be the evil that is done on them. As they have shamed other people, now they will be ashamed. As they've been they've disgraced other people, they will be disgraced. And we understand there's a time coming, the second coming of Christ, when this will be fulfilled in absoluteness, right? So beginning with verse 18, we're probably only cover three verses this morning. It's kind of the average we're hitting on as we go through here. But verse 18, what value is an idol since a man has carved it, forming an image that teaches lies? For the one who made it trusts in his own creation when he makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to the one saying to the wood, come to life, or arise to lifeless stone. Can it give guidance? Behold, it is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. What value is an idol? We're going to talk a lot about that this morning. First thing I want to say to you is this. How many words in the English language can you think of that have multiple, many, numerous synonyms that basically mean the same thing? I mean, certainly the most words that we have, there's at least one synonym, has basically the same meaning as the word that we're talking about, right? One of the amazing things, guys, is this is in Hebrew, there are 11, at least 11 words that are used that can be interpreted as an idol. Isn't that amazing? What each one of them does is it basically adds a little nuance to the overall meaning and understanding of what it is. So by studying all of them, we have a much greater idea what the concept of an idol is or what it intends. Let me just give you a few of these. There's one, this slim. It means it's something that represents something else, which we would think with an idol. You know, very often idols are actually representations of other things, right? Terapim, a thing of shame. In other words, this is how we would look upon the idols of the land of Canaan. They were shameful things. Elil means empty and meaningless and disdainful. In other words, it's supposed to be this, that, or the other, but it's not. It's empty. It's meaningless. And there's others. One of them can actually be translated most specifically as dung pellets. If you can imagine that. Emim means nothingness. So why so many words? Well, I would say a lot of things, and one of those is this. I think it's an indication of just how much of this stuff went on. Just how prevalent idol worship was. And just remember, we're talking about in Hebrew, the language of God's chosen people. These words used by them to describe idolatry in all of its depictions. We understand that idols have been a big part of the picture throughout the history of mankind. Paul writes this in regard to the history of mankind. Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. Talking about all people, no one has an excuse. No one can say that I don't know that there's a God. Just because of the ways that God has manifest himself in his creation around us. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and the Babylonians, they had their own idols. Just remember, Marduk was their chief god, and sometimes referred to the god of storm, sometimes referred to as the serpent gods, and all of that. But Marduk had a father. His name was Ea. And Marduk had a son, Nabu. And just so the women will feel a little bit better, they also had goddesses. Shamash, the sun god, Sin, the moon god. It's like they had a god for everything, an idol for everything. We understand this as well because we are familiar a little bit with Old Testament history and New Testament history too, right? Has idol worship been a regular kind of thing in the midst of those people who basically are called the people of God? You betcha. Abraham was an idol worshiper. He was a Chaldean. He was a Babylonian. I don't know if you made that connection or not. But he grew up in Ur of the Chaldeans, very close to Babylon. He was a pagan idol worshiper. You think about the Exodus, God delivering his people from Egypt. Do you know that when they came out of Egypt, they brought with them the gods and the idols of Egypt that they had learned when they were there for 400 years? Even after the parting of the Red Sea, even after God's provision of water and bread and everything all over and over and over again, they were still there. And then came the time when they went into the promised land. And this is what God said to Joshua. Well, let's see what he said to Moses first. He said to Moses, "You're about to lie down with your fathers, and this people will rise up and play the harlot with the strange gods of the land." He told Moses that before he died. Then along came Joshua. Moses died. The sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed themselves down to them. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherah. Think about the days of the judges. Most people would say that Gideon was one of the best judges. Remember how he came into the picture? God called him to tear down his father's idol, which he did. But did you understand that later on Gideon made another idol himself, and Israel began to worship this idol that Gideon made? Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, his heart was turned away, unlike his father David. His heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, for Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, and for Moloch, the detestable idol of Ammon. So it wasn't just one God, it was many gods. I don't know about you, but I thought about this, and if Solomon, the truly most wise person that ever lived, if he could not protect himself from this, what chance do you and I have? In Habakkuk's day, the worship of the true and living God in the temple was almost non-existent. Ezekiel. If you've ever read much in the book of Ezekiel, you know it's really written in apocalyptic language. In other words, it's probably the book sounds more like the book of Revelation you're going to find anywhere in the Bible. All kinds of symbols and signs and things like that. In one of the visions that God gave him, because Ezekiel had actually been taken, there actually were three deportations of people, exiles from Jerusalem, Judah, into Babylon, and Ezekiel went on the first one. So his prophecies, actually, that these things that he said and these visions he saw when he was in Babylon. But one of these visions says this. He says, "The Spirit lifted me up and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem." So here he is in Babylon, and whether literally picked up and moved there or just whatever, God brought him there in visions to the entrance of the north gate of the inner court where the idol of jealousy was located. "Son of man, do you see what they're doing? The great abominations which the house of Israel are committing here? I entered and looked, and behold, every form of creeping thing and beasts and detestable things, but all the idols of the house of Israel were carved on the wall and all around. Do you see what the elders of the house of Israel are committing in the dark? Women are sitting there weeping for Tammuz," which was a foreign god. 25 men with their backs to the temple and faces toward the east were prostrating themselves before the sun. They became sun worshipers. do you see this Son of Man? Is it too light a thing for the house of Judah to commit the abominations which they have committed here? Behold, they are putting the twig to their nose. It's an interesting phrase. It has to do with idol worship. Let's not forget the second commandment. You shall not make for yourself an idol. And it's Bethel, the same one that you find here in Habakkuk. Or any likeness of what is in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. Let me just say this. There's probably nothing more ridiculous than for people to do the kinds of things that were going on here. People carving stone, casting metal, carving wood into some image, and then treating it as if it were a god. When there was no life in it, there was no breath in it, no eyes to see, no ears to hear, no mouth to speak. Can you think of anything that sounds more ridiculous? Yet people do it nonetheless. And we understand that there's a sense in which it's something that is common among men, including us. So, I mean, as ridiculous as it can possibly be ridiculous, and yet people do it nonetheless. Everyone has to live for something, and if that something is not God, then they are driven by that thing they live for. In other words, we're either true and pure worshipers of God, or we are also idol worshipers. So what idols do you have? In a simple definition of an idol will be this: anything and everything that you put before God is an idol. And I would imagine as we're sitting here this morning, you're thinking about some of your idols maybe. If you're not, then maybe you should be. My question before you today is this, is how involved are you in tearing those idols down? Or are you just, or do we just go along? I've got this idol, I've got that idol, it's just no big deal, you know, that kind of thing. And so we just go on in life, it's just the way it is, I just have to learn to live with those idols. Idols do a lot of things, guys, but one of those things is this, is they keep us from God. They're stumbling blocks that sit between us and Him. Woe to the one saying to the wood, come to life and arise. Arise to lifeless stone. Can it give guidance? Isaiah helps to paint the picture of just how ridiculous this is. Talking about an idol worshiper, he cuts cedars for himself and takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself, he plants a fir, then it becomes something for a man to burn. So he takes some of them and warms himself. He also makes a fire to bake bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes a graven image and falls down before it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over this half he eats meat as he roasts to roast and is satisfied. He also warms himself, but the rest of it he makes into a god, his graven image. He falls down before it and worships it. He prays to it and says, "Deliver me, for you are my God." You get the picture here? Fred goes out in the woods, cuts down a tree. He brings it home. He cuts some of it up and he uses it for firewood. Some of that firewood he uses to warm himself. Some of it he uses for cooking. Then he takes another part of the same tree and he carves it into an image. And he declares that it is his God, and he falls down, and he worships it, and he prays to it, and asks it to bless him. Isn't that crazy? Most of you know that I do a little woodworking. I share that love with my father-in-law, Riley. And he's taught me a lot of what I know. Made a couple of tables last week. Now let me ask you something. What do you think? What would you think of me if I came in? You know, we bumped into each other about that time, and I was talking with you about the conversation I have with my tables. I was making them. You would think I was Fruit Loops, right? The only thing you do with wood is you take wood and you can make it into some shape, some practical thing that you may be able to use it for. But it's wood. That's all it is. It's just wood. It can't do anything except hold up your drink so it doesn't fall on the floor. Or provide you a place where you can write more legibly. But people have done this generation after generation after generation through the whole history of mankind. They're doing it today, and they're going to be doing it until the time Jesus returns. And that is when all idols are going to finally disappear from the picture. You ever wonder why very often in the Bible God is referred to as the living God? It's in order to make a distinction between him and other gods. You need to understand that. And he is the living God, which means all other gods are dead. They are meaningless. They are nothing. They have not the ability to do one thing. Ever go about talking to trees to get some? I'm in a mess and I need some advice. So I'm going to go outside and talk to my oak tree. I mean, it's funny. This is so ridiculous, it's hard not to laugh at it. But at the same time, it gives us a real picture of what the human heart is like. God is the living God. The Lord our God is the living God. And he's the only living God. Well, one of the things we must be confronted with at this point is this, and that is, what are my idols? And you have them. They're things that you put before God. Not just on rare occasions, but very often on a regular basis. There are things that you put before God every passing moment. And it's true for absolutely all people. And just think about all the effort sometimes we put into our idols, because idols can be anything, like we said. It could be your wife. You know, I know this, that my biggest idol in my life is my wife. Because I love her so much. I really would love to live the rest of eternity as her husband. But you understand, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's bad when she becomes an idol. In other words, she gets between me and God. Can be our children. Can be our friends. It can be our job. One of the big ones is it could be the love of money. Would you say that there are a lot of people around that have a great love for money today? Seems to be very pervasive, right? Very often, sacrifices are made to idols. I mean, this just adds another degree of ridiculousness to this whole picture. They would offer animal sacrifices to tree trunks with a face carved on it. And somehow believe that they were going to get something good, some blessing was going to come out of it. There's ever only been one true sacrifice. Do you understand that? Every other thing that has gone by the name of sacrifice through the whole history of mankind is not really a sacrifice. There's only been one. His name is Jesus. He was sacrificed. Not before a piece of wood or a chunk of stone, before the true and living God. Life given for life. Idol worship will be the undoing of Babylon. Idol worship will be the undoing of Judah. Idol worship has been the undoing of countless numbers of people that have lived in this world down through the ages. Think about the rich young ruler that came to Jesus. Do you understand that his big issue was this? He was an idol worshiper. He didn't worship the true and living God. He worshiped idols. His idol was money. All of this going on in the big picture of mankind, for the history of mankind. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let the earth be silent before him. There is one who is worthy of worship. His name is the Lord our God. He's not only worthy of worship, worship is due to him. In other words, it's what we owe him. In a sense, because of who he is. There's some phrases that I hear Christians saying sometimes that really make me sick. Because they think they are really these cool expressions that they share with other people. They have all this deep meaning and stuff like that. Have you ever heard anyone say, I am going to make Jesus the Lord of my life? Maybe you said that yourself. You understand, that's just as ridiculous as worshiping a tree or a rock. You see, we don't make Jesus Lord. Jesus is Lord, period. Whether we accept it or we deny it has nothing to do at all with whether he is the Lord or not. We talked something of this last week about Satan. Now, he's already done his very best to try to overthrow God. And not only him, that when he was cast out of heaven, he took a third of the angels with him. Where did he lead them? He led them into idol worship. So how successful do you think Satan has been? Now, maybe from a human perspective, you might say it seems like he's won the hearts of quite a few people down through the generations and ages, right? That we understand that Satan is not God. The temple referred to here is certainly Solomon's temple, still standing in Jerusalem, as Habakkuk writes. On Mount Zion. Ezekiel tells us some other things, and that is about this time or very soon after this, that the glory of God will leave not only the temple, but it's going to leave Jerusalem. And the thing about it is, guys, is they're never mentioned in the Bible of it ever returning. So we need to understand that there is a temple. The temple continues, right? But it's not the temple in Jerusalem that's not there now. That it won't be a temple that's built there by human physical hands ever. And we understand that all of that, the temple and the tabernacle and all those things, were just simply models of the real heavenly thing. That there is a heavenly throne room. And the Lord our God is sitting on the throne. And there's no one there that questions for one iota of a minute whether he is the Lord or not. Everyone there knows it. And they chant it over and over again. And we know that Jesus Christ in human form sits at the right hand of God the Father as we are speaking right now. We also understand that he will return to earth one of these days. And when he comes, all of these false gods and idols will vanish from among men. And every knee will bow, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is who? Is Lord of all. There's a sense in which God is quietly sitting in his throne now. That was what was going on with Habakkuk. That's one of the things that kind of upset him to begin with, is because he looked out and he saw all this stuff going on. He's saying, gosh, why aren't you doing anything? Lord, you're up there, you're silent. You're sitting up there not doing anything. You're not even answering. There's some sense that this has been going on all along here. There's a lot of peace in knowing what's coming. As long as you're on the right side of it. And what I'm saying here, guys, is this, is why God's sitting quiet. Because none of it's a threat to him at all. He will speak. And when he speaks, that'll be the end of it. But he will speak in his time. And he will speak in his day. And he will speak in his way. Are we willing sometimes to sit quietly waiting with him? And I love Psalm 46, verse 10. Be still and know that he is God. In other words, you don't need to be worried about diddly anything. Anxiety should not be part of the picture. Fear should not be part of the picture. So now they sing that song this morning. One of the verses says this: before the Prince of Peace, let the noise and clamor cease.